Turuntuset tulee jo on äl.
Our main topic today is new trends in loyalty. And to introduce the topic, I would like to say that the first companies who started the loyalty programs were airlines and hotels, and they were targeting mostly high-value business customers. Today, we see loyalty programs in most of the retail chains and also in business-to-business companies, and we see also that the line between sales promotion and loyalty is somewhere blurring. And John, first question to you, what are the recent trends in developing customer loyalty, what you see?
Yeah, well, thank you for the invite onto your program. It's most welcome. I think actually the blurring between sales promotion and loyalty probably had happened quite a long time ago. I don't think it's a recent phenomenon. I think you would probably have to go back way in time in terms of trying to find somebody who got loyalty right. I think what has happened over the years is that it's been very difficult to find anybody that knows the difference basically between sales promotion and loyalty. I think what we've seen, if you look back, say, the last 2-3 years, I think are a number of things that have happened. And to me, probably the most important thing is the price of loyalty has changed. And what do I mean by that is that I think both sides, the customer and the person providing the service or the product, they both realize that there is a price to loyalty. From a company, there's a price in terms of what they must pay to develop a program, manage a program, and to operate that program. And then on the other side, from a customer's perspective, there's a price. Because today, typically a customer has to give personal information. They're obviously providing transaction history. Sometimes maybe they're being asked directly for customer feedback. So there is a price on both parts. It's not just a one-sided relationship. Both sides now realize that they're in this together. And I think, again, if I look back in time, and I still see it quite a lot at the moment, is that there is a focus, it seems to be totally, on looking only at the highest value guest. For example, in the case of a hotel loyalty program. I think my own perspective is that typically, if that's someone who's in an airline program, a hotel program, or a coalition program, they tend to be the same profile of customer. And I think what we need to do is, and I see this a little bit starting to trend now, is as with the long tail economics, that if everyone focuses on the same people who are providing the richest vein of customer transactions, then there does come to a point where you have to widen your net. You have to say, who else can I nurture or who else can I develop into a more prospective customer? And I think now with the advent of technology, the lowering cost of IT as an investment, and more companies now willing to take a risk, I think the net that they are casting to create loyalty is going a little bit wider now. So it's not just looking at those within the highest quartile. They're looking now at how do they spread their focus to potentially get more customers. I think companies are scratching their heads to work out how they can reward social interaction. So a lot are looking probably at the digital world to try and understand how they can reward behavior, not just purchase transactions, because behavior now can provide as much in value in terms of the recommendation and endorsements for maybe future purchase, as opposed to just the one-off transaction. So I think in terms of a trend, really looking at how using social media and just the whole interaction across the social media platforms, how can you reward that? I think many companies who've gone through the cost and benefit analysis of running a loyalty program, probably what is beginning to happen now is reassessing the view. So if you're going to invest in a loyalty program, and you're looking at how to get a return in terms of loyalty from a customer, it's a short-term view versus a longer-term benefit. So companies, I think, today are very much looking at what is it they have to invest over what period of time to be able to get a return on their investment. And depending on the standing of that company, public, private, depending on the pressure on that company for performance, I think there is, again, a trend here where companies are looking at what is the quick fix. If they don't have a program or if they don't have a loyalty play, how can they come into the market with something which will almost overnight give them that opportunity via a platform to communicate and get a customer to come back? I think when you look at the development of loyalty programs, there has been a distinct trend, I think, as you explained at the beginning, that if you look back in time, it was the travel-related programs that really developed the whole loyalty game based around a focus on the business traveler. And I think what you've seen is that the travel industry, predominantly the airlines, have in many areas of business been the forerunners, the innovators. And I think basically when you look at how those loyalty programs have developed, they've gone more from a pure travel play into the retail world. And I think the retail environment has, through its own way of innovating, now developed through the coalition programs, a far broader offering in value, a more effective business model for someone to run a loyalty program where you're sharing the cost and the benefit, rather than the, I think, older, more traditional programs which refer more to how we all, I think, see loyalty. So I think a distinct trend there. I think probably for me, the biggest influence are the consumers themselves, who have far bigger expectations from what they have as a purchase or a relationship than they've ever had before. So there is a pressure on companies on how they try and develop a relationship with you as an individual. I think that empowerment for the consumer means, whether that be through social interaction or moving their business, they have a huge opportunity now with a variety and choice that they don't have to always be loyal to a particular brand. So that's a difficult game now for suppliers to understand how they can meet the demands for that. I think from the customer side, yes, they understand that they have to give away some of their information, but I think what's always hanging over loyalty is privacy. And I think the debate around how much you can give away, the value of that information that you have, and the balance between what is invasive and what is personalized, I think that's certainly a big trend in terms of how you can deal with that. If you're going to provide a customer with choice and options, you can only do that with information. And if it's going to be relevant, you really need to have that backwards and forwards. So I think that's a difficult one, but I think some companies are doing well at that. Also, I guess if you look at, because of the empowerment of the consumer, there are many, many channels now that a consumer can use to get access to a product, be that from research, be that from purchase, after sales. Because there are so many different channels, this whole multi-channel approach, I think that's a trend that companies have to look at how they can manage both the expectations of the consumer, but also that they have a consistent approach across all the different channels. Because I think consistency here is king. Because if you're going to get someone to believe in you as a brand, if you're going to get them to want to come back to you, wherever they have some kind of contact with you, you have to be consistent in your approach.
John, a small question to you. We were talking about those new trends, and my question actually is, when we are talking about loyalty, we first of all, we think about customers who are loyal to the brand. But at the same time, we have to recognize that the more information it somehow moves or gives new opportunities to customers not to be loyal. So my question to you is actually how does the customer, a simple customer, rich or poor, we don't know, actually see this loyalty things? And does there exist a theory or practice where we could say that the customer feels that some companies or brands are loyal to them?
Yeah, I think it probably depends a little bit on your experience over time. So either what you've been exposed to or because you've decided to go out and buy something and maybe it's an area you're not familiar with that you do more research on. I think what you find is that it always comes back ultimately to customer experience. I think in a retail supermarket environment where we probably think less about loyalty, but in fact, it's probably one of the places that they know the most about you because they see everything you buy, the offers you get are relevant to your purchase behavior. So I think it depends a little bit. If you're in an environment where it's frequent small purchases, maybe you don't even realize that someone is amassing this information on you, as opposed to an environment where, say, if you buy a car, which I think for most of us is a big purchase item, in that sales environment, they tend to have a far more data mining approach because they're trying to work out if you're going to buy another new car, when is that going to happen, try and keep the relationship going, try and develop some kind of link. So I think it depends a little bit how big the purchase item is and how infrequent or frequent you buy it. Depends on the amount of loyalty data someone can mine, use, and then communicate with you.
At the same time, we, as a customers, we sometimes don't like, and more we are reading it information from internet, we understand that the more and more people are not eager to give away their contacts and information about themselves, and they try to go to the places that nobody asks them who they are. So how actually the company who wants to build up good loyalty programs with their customers, how could they manage this problem of people who don't want to give any information out?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one. I think it depends a little bit on the product and service, but I think most people try and are open to a relationship if they trust you. So I think loyalty in general is not something that you can rush. If you have some resistance, then the last thing you should do is pressure people or your consumer into it. I think where they see a benefit can be more in terms of peer group pressure, that the number of friends that I have that have the loyalty program cards of the supermarkets, for example, it's often that you maybe don't want to give away personal information, but ultimately you assess it and say, well, for me to give away information, ultimately, if I get a benefit that I get a discount or if I get something that if I'm not in the program, I wouldn't get, then sometimes that value is enough eventually to open the door for you. And I think in terms of supermarkets, it doesn't always have to be sales promotion. It can be an easy thing like you don't have to stand at the cashier's desk and put your shopping through. You can do it all through the barcoded system. So it can be more in terms of efficiency, takes you less time to shop, not just also the fact that you get a discount as well. So I think it's a little bit peer group pressure. It's a little bit giving it time so that you can see how much you would trust somebody. And you're probably looking around a little bit as well and seeing what friends, relatives, etc., how they're using it and what they're doing.
John, I want to ask We are here a bit in already in the topic about using all different kind of process. Processes to to increase loyalty, but my question always has been that that how can we use social media or internet to increase loyalty? So that we don't talk about sales promotion, but we really talk about different customer behavior that the customer will like.
Yeah, I think social interaction today plays probably an indirect benefit where, for example, you as a company may have certain values, and you as a customer, if your channel of communication or where you spend most time is say on one of the social media platforms, then I think companies are smart enough to realize that they can't directly influence you to purchase them through doing a Facebook ad. That's a little bit of the overall approach. But what they can do is just reinforce those values that they say as a company they have, and use the platform as a tool to communicate, put themselves in front of you, reinforce how open they are, and just underline the fact that if you were going to trust a company to give them some personal data or to have a loyal relationship that you bought their branded product or service rather than somebody else's, I think it's just reinforcement as opposed to a direct, blatant play, because I think social media is quite difficult to target and focus because it's so wide in its coverage and so easy to probably get a message lost in translation, that I think the wise company uses it in part of its tools, but not totally. It uses it to complement other ways that it's in the media as well. So to me, it's all about reinforcing customer experience, building the trust, and showing that as a company, we're transparent and we're consistent in the message that we put across all types of media.
Can you give us an example, a successful one from a company who has done something well, increasing the loyalty in social media?
I think it's very difficult, actually. I think
social
media is such a new form. I think companies are assessing today how successful are they on social media, because I think social media started out for a while there that companies' only focus was return on investment. So how can I make social media give me a return in terms of people buying things from me? I think what I look at now is that if I see some social causes or campaigns that have developed over social media, then I don't know today if many of them are branded. That they come around almost, some of them, I think, by accident. And I think customers have a natural aversion to something overtly branded via social media because they feel it's being paid for or sponsored, or, you know, is it really genuine? And I think most companies that probably win from it are when something happens that their product or brand is in the vicinity of or is seen at, and then it gets a lot of exposure, and then there's often a follow-up. I mean, the stuff, if you look at the American football at the Super Bowl, and if you think about the history of that over the years, there was so much advertising done, but it seems the winners from something as massive as this global sporting event are less those that are spending the millions on the advertising, and it seems more that are generating interest around the event via social media. So in terms of how they measure it, it's how many people are, you know, in the Twitter feed, how many mentions they're getting. So I think it's developing, but I don't think I have off the top of my head a perfect example for you just yet.
Okay. When we see now that that loyalty is more and more integrated also into let's say service design and customer experience design, and for me it seems that that all these things, how to say, grow out from the concept of loyalty. Do you agree with me? And if you do agree, can you tell me some examples where this type of concepts have helped to boost loyalty in a company?
Yeah, I think, so yes, I totally agree with you. And I think my premise for that is, for someone who's worked many years in a service industry, hospitality, you see that one of the easiest ways to diffuse a potentially difficult situation is to actually just be in front of the customer and to listen to them. And I think all of this ultimately comes from a perspective that if you have a problem, typically the first thing you want to do is explain your problem to an employee or a representative of the company. And often I think you hear of situations where employees aren't empowered to take decisions, so they can listen but they can't do anything about it because they have to go and see their boss. And I think from the hospitality industry, with the company that I used to work with before, which was the Residor Hotel Group, they had a very successful customer service culture based around a phenomenon called Yes, I Can. So in effect, they were already putting planting the seed of the idea in the employee that whatever the question was, it was always going to be Yes, I Can. And I think what that does is two things. It makes a company more customer-focused, user-friendly, and open, rather than defensive and saying, well, that's not our problem, that was somebody else did that. The first thing you have to do is say, yes, how can we help you? If there is a problem, let's see how we can overcome it. And I think when you look today at the multi-channel world that we live in, I think the whole approach probably started in the service industry, where you're always looking to be consistent in how you treat people across those different channels. So I think it started in the service industry, but has now propagated across all different types of businesses, where they really are keen to make promises that as a product, brand, service, this is what they're here to do. And if they are unfortunate and maybe something doesn't work out, as a part of that promise, they're there also to remedy it. Put their hand up, say, okay, we have a problem, let's now resolve that. And what I saw for many, many years with Yes, I Can was that sometimes just the fact that you're listening, you create more advocates than arguing when you can see clearly it's not actually your fault. So the fact that you listen, accept, try and resolve, even when there is a problem, you actually get far more loyalty because they see you as human. They see that you have a human face, that you're trying to help them, and you go that extra mile. And I think successful companies today are all about service, transparency, being consistent in their approach and empowering those people across different levels of the company, therefore different channels, different areas, where they can make a decision. And I think customers respect that, are happy that they have the openness to be able to approach someone. And then that inherently creates loyalty, because they know if they ever have a problem again, they know there's someone they can come back to. So I think within Residor, within the Yes I Can culture, that this very service-minded training approach that was instilled in every person that joined the company was very, very positive to the employee because they felt empowered. And that came across to the customer that they felt they could get a question answered there and then. So I think started in the service industry, but has now gone on to many other industries.
Very good. But what else can a company do? What are the most efficient things? Okay, we have a good culture. We always accept everything what the customer tells. We fulfill all the promises. What else are the ways that we can use to increase the loyalty?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to understand your customer. And understanding here means the drivers. So why are they buying from you rather than a competitor? So that you can mold whatever it is you're selling to the desires and the driver of why the customer is buying. I think you have to be interactive, so open to customer contact and able to respond. So the email doesn't go into a black hole, that you are able to pick up the phone and call the customer, that they see that there is that kind of initiative. I think data is vital. I think this last couple of years, data has probably been the biggest trending. But I think if you have data, it's always making sure that whatever you have, you use intelligently. So don't go down the road that as a small company, all you do is think about the data and you come into this analysis paralysis. It's more about focusing on your priorities and using data to help get to them. But don't make data the priority and the whole focus. So using what you have intelligently, I think understanding the purchase pattern and the drivers behind the customer, be proactive to what the customer is telling you. So if you see that the market is shifting, patterns are changing, demands are different, then go with the customer as opposed to say, well, no, we're only making it like this because we've always made it like that. That's the worst thing you can do. Recognize when trends are having a major impact and move along with it or try and be in front of it rather than following it, because following is never the best place to be. Listen. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. But I just wanted to take a very concrete example. We always hear in our marketing radio talk show talk about summer touring companies, and the most popular companies probably, or popular field, is the companies who produce wooden houses or log houses. We are Europe's fourth biggest exporter in this field, and that's why, let's take a real life example. If I'm a owner of a company who produces log houses and exports them, most of them to Scandinavian, to small and medium-sized real estate developers. And my question is, what could I do in my company to increase my customers' loyalty?
Okay. I mean, I think there is a logical approach to that, and I'm probably quite boring to repeat, but I think it's most important to identify who your customers are. And if you're selling,
If I say that they are Scandinavian, small, medium-sized real estate developers, what else or what more should I know about them?
The reason why they buy from you, when do they buy from you, how do they buy from you? So it's breaking down into the detail. What's the difference between you and your competitors? Then you have to understand what that difference is so that you can exploit it. And I think what you need to do is make sure you focus on those things which are very difficult to copy. So a bad example would be don't focus on price. A good example would be your culture, your approach, your level of service-mindedness. So always, in terms of developing a market, you have to understand where you sit, who buys, and what's the difference between you and the rest. I think if you are exporting, there are a number of considerations that you have to take into account. One is language and culture. So do you understand both? And if you don't, can you get access to expertise that will help you? So if you are producing something for a specific market, it would be naive to think that if you're selling a log cabin or a house for I don't know, 200,000 krona, then do you have material in Swedish? Do you have a website that is available in all the languages? Do you have customer care, after-sales service? All these different aspects of if you are selling to somebody in real estate, they're going to want to know if there is a problem, if they are the person in the middle, how can they get help? So it's all about making sure that you have material communication relevant to where you're selling to. I think endorsement and accreditation is always good. So if you're selling it from Estonia into parts of Scandinavia, is there a particular body there, association, or somebody that needs to endorse what you're doing to actually show that you've gone that extra mile, whether that be for environmental, corporate social responsibility, or these different aspects that today play more of a role in our life. So understanding the impact of what you do and how it has on things around you. I think when you are losing sales, it's as important to understand why you lose a sale as it is about how you are selling. So are you losing because of price, positioning, restrictions on legislation, or, you know, trying to work out why did you lose a sale? So it's important if you're going to develop, you understand that just as much. I think key here is that because it's a larger item, it's visiting your customer so that they see you, they see that you live your brand, that you understand their market, that you're happy to invest your time and money to come and see your customer. I think that's always a very good way to show the transparency and relationships that you want to build. I think for me, where as an exporter, you can probably again add a little bit of value is if you're selling your log house, have you looked at developing partnerships? So for example, is there something complementary to having a log house, be that the paint, the varnish, the, I don't know, other different products that maybe you can organize some kind of relationship with a local supplier that you get discount or you get extra added value benefits, so that you're showing that by working with my company, it's not only value, quality, distribution. There are other things as well that come with that because you've really thought about how you can be successful in the market. And I'd probably say that specifically for Scandinavia, from what I've experienced, it's all about network, recommendation, and testimonials. So if you do have happy customers, let them speak for you. I think that would probably be it.
John, my last question to you is actually about yourself, the places, maybe retail places where you do shopping. How do they get your loyalty? What do they do differently?
Yeah, I'm probably the world's worst shopper and the world's best shopper combined in one, because my wife now refuses to go shopping with me because I spend so much time going around looking at all the different products from a marketing perspective that she doesn't really want me in the shop. But for me, I guess what I look for is transparency. So, you know, I think in terms of retail now, most go down the route of sales promotion. So they're happy to have you in the store. Now how can they give you an offer that's relevant? So I look for relevancy. I'm happy for my wife to give her information, but obviously I benefit, but on how relevant what they're giving me makes to a difference in my life. Then when I look at the, it's not only the offer, it's the shop itself. So what's the experience like? You know, I know there are other shops I can potentially get the same product cheaper, but do I have the same experience? And how far away are they from where we live? So I think there's a couple of tangible, rational reasoning But also for me, I'm all about experience. So if I'm happy in a shop, I would tend to spend more rather than if I'm feeling a little bit rushed and I don't quite see the deals they're giving me are quite what I want, then that's not a nice experience and I probably wouldn't spend so much then.
John, would you suggest that we should forget all about sales promotions, all about discounts, and just focus on the service experience? Would that create, let's say, 100% of loyalty?
No, I think I would love to be thinking that that was the case, that I would give somebody more of my business because they had a lovely smile and blue eyes. But unfortunately, I think we all have a different level of rationality in terms of how we buy things. And I think you always have to try and find, for you as a company, product, service, what is the right balance? How much of a personality can come across and how much of is it just purely about cost? So I think, depending on your market, depending on how mature or immature loyalty is in your market, then I think you can use different techniques to stimulate customers via loyalty and then support that with a sales promotion approach, as opposed to some of the more mature markets. If you look at somewhere like the UK, I'd say for the last couple of years, that's a market where they're saturated with loyalty programs. And at the end of the day, they're now fighting each other over price. So, you know, I think it's ups and downs in terms of how the customer wants to be communicated to. But ultimately, we're all there to get the best price. But it's how you communicate it and the way that you can develop and evolve that relationship. It does change country by country, I think, because maturity of loyalty is in different stages across those countries.